Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, welcome to Good Job, where we interview some inspiring people from the music industry and look at their journey from their very worst job to present day.
They were kind of encouraging me to keep going with it, but I think when you know something's wrong, no matter how encouraging people around you are, it just crushes your soul.
Today's guest is Rhiannon Herridge, a wonderful singer who had to give up her job travelling the world as an opera soprano on the prestigious Silver Sea World Cruise due to vocal damage. We talk about how to prevent and recover from vocal damage, the effect this had on her confidence, and how a back injury may have caused the vocal problem in the first place, as well as chat about her struggle with perfectionism.
Good job.
We start with the same question every single time. What was your very worst job?
I could have been a bit kinder with this maybe and just gone with like a bar job or something, which is always bad for singers. But I think that actually my worst one was it's not because the sentiment of the job. So it was singing in care homes, which I think is amazing. Really, really amazing. But the job itself had me doing like 2 to 3 hour long shows, solo shows a day. And it was like driving between all these different care homes in places I didn't know. And that really stresses me out anyway, not knowing where I'm going. And there were like chunks of monologue in it. And like my brain works fine learning dialogue, but monologue apparently was not my forte. It was a really, really, really stressful job for me, it turned out, even though like at the end of each show, I was like, heart melted, kind of, you know, with all the old people. But
I've worked in a care home as well, doing some singing over Christmas. I found it in some places was really nice, and in some places, dependent on like the quality of the care home, was quite sad.
Oh, really?
Really sad. Yeah, yeah. So I was like, it was a really kind of diverse emotional journey.
Yeah, I've done some Christmas, more local kind of Christmas care home work as well, and I found with that, with like the carols or like old Welsh songs and things, definitely it's really nostalgic for them. And it is an emotional experience.
Sure. Yeah. And it's interesting on jobs like this because I do think they're like super important and really nice for people, and they don't get like loads of entertainment all the time in care homes and things like that. But then the companies do make you work for really, really long hours, and then you're trying to give something to people, but you don't have the resources to do that anymore.
Yeah, because singing really should be, in an ideal world, kind of like coming from you organically. But obviously, you don't have that luxury really in the modern day, not so much anyway. So yeah, a lot of different jobs are quite taxing in that way.
Yeah, even like big musicals and stuff, you're doing 8 shows a week and you've got to try and be consistent. But if you just feel a bit tired one day, it's really tricky.
Yeah,
for sure.
So true. Yeah.
So what was your journey into music? Where did you start?
I always sang ever since I was tiny, like with my mom in the car or when I was in nursery, just, you know, like in nativity play, being Mary and just being center stage. I still got a video of me like shouting, like belting it out, and you can hear no one else kind of thing, even the songs that are not mine. So like I always loved singing. I started piano lessons, my mum's idea, not so much mine, because I'm not a natural pianist at all. Like I love doing the chords, but sight reading and that kind of, I couldn't progress kind of thing. But my piano teacher, with the oral tests and stuff, was like, oh, you should really get Rhiannon into like a choir or something. So I started a girls' choir, and then the conductor had me doing the solos and things. It kind of like progressed from there. So that was from like age 10. I stayed until I was about 16. And then the conductor was like, you could maybe see if she wants to, she could do conservatoire, carry it on that way. Yeah. And I didn't really know that existed before then. And it just sounded like a much nicer thing to study than all the other things that school had offered me. So school were really, really surprised. I'd done a few things in school, but I wasn't like center stage at all.
It's the same in Scotland, but choir is so part of community. And Wales is renowned for choir, and so many people start from choir. Do you think that gave you a good grounding?
I think it did. Because it was a kids' choir, it definitely really developed my ear, I would say, for music, because like the way we learned everything was all oral and kind of like I find all that side of things pretty easy, and I think that's probably to do with choir.
Interesting, because on the boats, when we didn't have the sheet music, and then a lot of opera people are like, I can only learn from sheet music.
Yeah.
So for you, I guess that's really, really helpful.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I wasn't used to it when we had the classical music, just from like auditory learning when I first started on the ships, but all the kind of pop stuff, it wasn't a problem at all in the harmonies and things. So just, I was used to it. But yeah, there's a massive tradition in Wales with the choirs and things like the festivals and the Steddfods and yeah, there's a lot that really pushes you into the music world to explore, and yeah, kind of lucky really.
I felt the same in Scotland in that like it wasn't really unusual to be a singer, but then also, like as you say, people being shocked, like I was similar. I didn't really like stand out amongst singers or anything. And some people who were like the top singers in the school didn't go on to do it, and some people who weren't have gone on to sing, and I guess it's the way it works out. It depends how much you like doing it, I think, actually.
Yeah, because it's a lot of commitment.
And we met when you were working on the ships.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about ship life.
Definitely there are pros and cons. Yeah. It's amazing in that when you're there you forget how lucky you are to wake up in a different place every morning, and they're usually all amazing places as well, and you're kind of chasing the sun because obviously the way they choose where the ship goes is like for the best peak times as well, so it's always, you're usually in glorious sunshine. And I don't know, for me it has challenges in that I think I'm slightly more introverted than a lot of singers tend to be, and a big part of the company that I work for is the socializing aspect. It's not that I don't like the guests, it's not that I'm antisocial, I just sometimes struggle to do that so regularly with new people all the time. I find it like a little bit overwhelming. I think that's the part for me that really drains me, whereas even though we repeat the shows loads and loads of times, I actually don't mind that part of it at all. Some people find that really difficult.
I mean, it's quite demanding vocally because you're doing so many different styles.
Yeah, that's true. So there's the opera show, which also has classical crossover, but it's still the same kind of technique. But then there are like the more jazzy shows or the more pop ones too, and it can be difficult to transition between them, especially if you've had like the schedule will change every cruise, and sometimes you'll have kind of a few kind of poppy shows and then straight afterwards the classical show coming up, and you're kind of worried if you've somehow like tightened things or like,
well, it's so different technique in where you place it and stuff like that. And they always make sure that you've got someone whose forte is on each genre, of course, but then you still have to mold towards that genre even if you're not singing like leads all the time.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, because otherwise you kind of feel like you ruined the show, you know, like if you if you're doing like a pop show and you've got like cracking leads going for it, riffing and stuff, and then you start doing some harmonizing but it's like operatic in the background, it's not pretty. So
well, I have to say that you're very good at molding between styles.
I think that probably comes from my love of Disney.
Oh, really?
That came before, like, classical love, definitely. So I think that, like, it's kind of poppy in a way. So,
Yeah, it's definitely poppy.
Yeah. Sure.
You've got the musical theatre sort of style down as
well. Yeah. It's, like, in my blood kind of thing from being so young. And
And I feel like musical theatre is quite a good base if you're doing this sort of work, because you can go into then different genres.
Yeah, I think so too, yeah.
Instead of being, like, rooted in either opera or pop, you kind of have that middle ground.
Yeah.
Although, of course, it is sometimes, it's either specialising at something or being versatile.
I do kind of think with that, though, it's almost like whichever you are, if you're versatile or if you're sticking with one genre, you kind of always want to be the other one, if you know what I mean. You kind of like, grass is always greener type of thing.
Yeah, but there's pros and cons to kind of
each. That's probably why, yeah.
So you've had a bit of a bad time with your voice recently.
Yes.
And vocal injury. How did that come about for you?
Tricky to say where it began, but where it begins for me in my mind is when we were in rehearsals for my last ship together, the two of us, and we both got pretty ill.
I think I gave it to you, which I feel really bad about.
You might have. You may not have. So. It was a pretty bad virus, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I don't know. Rehearsals is like maybe 2 or 3 week long process. Mm-hmm. And it was toward the beginning of rehearsals, really. And so I kind of thought by the time I was going aboard the ship, that I'd probably be on the mend. And then, the beginning part of the contract was without the classical show because there was like a chunk of my voice that there was nothing coming out. So like it was a no-go completely. About a month in, we tried to reintroduce the classical show. It was just kind of soul-destroying experience, really, because a lot of like non-musical people on the ship were kind of like, oh, it's fine, it's fine. I don't know what you're worried about, but like, I know it wasn't just in my head because I have recordings as well and it was not fine kind of thing. But I think that I kind of got away with it with some of the guests, you know. They were kind of encouraging me to keep going with it. But I think when you know something's wrong, no matter how encouraging people around you are, it just crushes your soul. So, yeah.
Did you find you lost a lot of confidence?
Yeah, and it's still like a sore topic now. When I think back, I'm like, oh, it was awful.
Well, there's nothing worse than going on stage and feeling like you can't do the job for whatever reason.
Yeah.
And when you've got an illness or something like that, it just prevents you from feeling like you're at your best and you've got control over your voice.
Yeah. And you feel like you can't blossom in like other areas as well, because you feel like with the acting or like really doing like the movement with conviction and stuff, you kind of feel like such a fraud because you're not be able to vocalize like you want to.
And I feel like singing is so part of a singer's identity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really like personal.
Yourself is gone.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I tried my hardest not to make it a personal thing or to kind of trivialize it a bit more and be like, think of what other people are going through. It's only your voice. Like there are way worse illnesses to have. And I don't know, I just couldn't talk myself down as much as I tried. It's a very personal thing, yeah.
It really makes sense, I think, that you would feel like that. And of course, it isn't life-threatening or something like that, but you're threatening your career and part of your identity that you love and something that you love to do. So of course, you're going to feel a bit like sad about it or underconfident about it.
Yeah.
Do you think that singing on it was one of the issues?
I think it could have been. So I think people should beware when they decide to do that. Like, I haven't done damage in terms of nodules and things like that. And I think that's what people mainly are concerned about, which is a worry. But I've had like different muscles come into play that shouldn't really be helping me with my vocalizing. Now that the virus is out the window, they're still coming into play and like overcompensating for things and just getting in the way of natural vocalization. And I think pushing through singing on an illness, that pushing is what causes them then to
do that.
So it's like new habits that you really don't want to be cultivating.
And it's so hard because there's a lot of pressure when you're ill and you're in a job.
Yeah, yeah. And so many times as well, like on the ship, people were like, well, like, don't give your all kind of thing. Just like, do what you can with it. And if you need to hold back a bit, that's okay. We've got a mic here and we can turn you up and that kind of stuff. And you're like, yeah, okay, I'm on board with that. That's a good idea. But once you're on stage and once you have an audience, you can't help in a way but give more than you intend to. You feel like really compelled from somewhere to just give everything you can.
And then on the other side, I know you said that you felt like you got away with it from some of non-musical people.
Yeah.
But then you also have the pressure to maintain standards as well. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And even if it's just your own standards.
I think that's even tougher, is maintaining your own standards than what the ship, for example, expect. Because I just couldn't not strive for that.
Well, we were going to have a little chat about perfectionism. Mm-hmm. That's something that you've struggled with.
Yes.
Perfectionism can be a good thing, but also can be a bit of a curse.
Yeah, yeah. I actually think that people who don't suffer from perfectionism think that it's like a desirable trait.
Yeah.
I don't think it is. I think I did for a long time, actually, when I was younger too, because like people kind of encourage it so much. But I have found that it's a bit of a pain for me, actually, just like being too critical with yourself. I was telling you before about the year defenders. For me, I don't know if other people use these, but for me they really help when I'm just practicing, because I will listen to my own sound and just there'll be like a dialogue in my head while I'm singing of like what's wrong with it and stuff. And then also I'll try and adjust things you should more be feeling what you're singing rather than listening to what you're singing. Because what I hear, because of all the like bones in the face, the way that the sound's conducted, what I hear isn't what an audience member would hear anyway. So like, it's such a bad tactic, but I almost can't help myself. So like, to wear something like your Defenders is really good for me, so I can try and focus on feeling what I'm doing instead.
Because to me, I feel like I need to hear myself to mm-hmm. be able to sing.
Yeah.
But then I guess everyone's different with that. Would mm-hmm. you like record yourself and listen after?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and like try out different things as well. Like say like the first time sounded better to me personally, but it felt freer the second time, and then listen back and be like, oh, the second time sounded better. Definitely like as a classical singer as well, you can fall into the trap of wanting to sound as big as possible. And you can like maneuver certain things to make that happen. You know, like pulling the tongue root down and different, like depressing the larynx on purpose and things without quite knowing that that's what you're doing, but you'll manage a way to make you sound big to yourself. And then you're like all self-indulgent, like, oh yeah, this is sounding great. But actually from the outside, you're not letting the resonance happen. And so you're actually restricting your sound when you think that you're making this big beefy noise. So
yeah,
you can fall into traps, definitely.
I think as well, you can perceive something as feeling right because you've done it so often like that, that it starts to feel right, mm-hmm. even though it's actually quite tense.
Yeah.
It takes until you find the way that isn't tense to go, oh, actually. Yeah,
definitely.
I see.
And it's the same like with support and things as well. Sometimes you're like, yeah, I'm definitely supporting. And then you're having a session and find your actual support and you go, oh yeah, no, I wasn't doing that for a while kind of thing. So yeah, it's, yeah.
And do you think it's something that you have to revisit a lot, like in training? Do you revisit, go back to vocal coaches and things like that?
Yeah, I've always been one really to keep in touch with my singing teachers or coaches and things. Yeah. I think it's always good to have someone else's opinion, and especially obviously an expert's opinion as well.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So let's go back to vocal recovery.
Mm-hmm.
How did you recover, or how have you been? You're still in recovery from mm-hmm. this.
So initially I came off the ship early. I was there for a few months and then I saw an ENT specialist while I was still on board the ship, but we docked in Ireland.
Yeah. So for anyone who doesn't know, it's ear, nose and throat specialist. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so he did a scope on me to have a look at the vocal cords and saw that there was nothing on the cords. But he just basically said if I had 48 hours total vocal rest with absolutely no speaking, nothing, which is harder than it sounds, especially on a ship with people around everywhere, that should be fine. He thought it was just like a fatigue thing. That was like a relief. I kind of had the feeling it wasn't like a nodule thing anyway. And so it was a relief to hear a specialist say that too. Before that, I'd gone to the ship's doctor who'd given me steroids to try and get through the show. And then other people since then have been like, maybe don't do that unless it's like a really acute kind of like one concert or two concerts and you've just got like this coldy thing that won't go away type situation, rather than like, you know, performing pretty consistently and have something that's not gone away for a long time. Like using steroids might not be the best.
Did you have any reactions to it?
To begin with, I did. And I thought like they were going to solve everything. And then kind of after a week, I was like, I don't think this is good for me. And so nothing particularly bad happened, but I think my own intuition kicked in, and luckily was it going in the right direction, because a lot of people afterwards were like,
I've heard horror recommended stories.
I ended up coming home then from the ship because the 48 hours didn't work at all. And then my plan was kind of to lay low until this was like summertime till after Christmas to like not worry about jobs or what's going to happen or anything. It weirdly, it was every time I was vocalizing, it was like a tiny, tiny bit better, but it was moving so slowly. And then I'd applied to Help Musicians UK, who are amazing, sometime during that period. And then they'd given me a grant. That's when I went to see Dane Chalfin. I hope I'm saying his name right. Mm-hmm. he's a vocal rehab coach in London. I'm still seeing him now. I'm seeing him in 2 days' time too. It's been invaluable. Like, I don't know what I would have done without Help Musicians, because I wouldn't have even known who Dane was, let alone with the funding and things. Like, they've been amazing. I've also seen osteopaths with their funding as well. So initially it was to check for like tenseness in general here. It's kind of like a similar to physio ed, but less intense version, yeah, kind of
so
thing.
So like more around the larynx and neck area.
Yeah, yeah. And that's when I kind of discovered that all my lymph nodes in this area were still chock-a-block full from the virus, which by that point was like almost a year ago. They kind of tried to manipulate to free my lymph nodes so that all the gunk from the virus could leave. So
yeah.
I think that actually was instrumental in like taking everything quite a big step forward. Yeah. I think that was holding me back quite a lot. And I did generally puffy face, but this side like way more. You know your face so well, and most people didn't quite know what it was, but like I'd say to my mum, be like, look at my face, kind of, you know. And they were like, I looked like a different person on each side because it was such a big swelling this side. But that went then when I saw that osteopath the first time.
And you were telling me earlier this was from actually an injury in your back.
Yeah, sorry, you didn't mention that. Yeah,
well, it's amazing how connected everything is. An injury in your back then is connected to your singing.
Yeah, the first session we didn't realize that that's what it was, and we're just like, oh, why is this so okay, let's sort this out type of thing. And then just through talking things through and manipulating different things, I think it was after the second session, my back is like always sort of painful, but it like really had a flare up in like a specific spot. Mm-hmm. So I was talking about it then when I went back. Turns out that it's from an injury I fainted like 8 years ago from labyrinthitis, and it was onto like a kitchen island, like a point of a kitchen island. But it's actually really lucky because it was also a marble floor, so if I'd gone straight down it probably would have been way worse. My back went into the corner of the kitchen island on the way down. I was out at the time and there were loads of other injuries too, so I never paid that much attention to it. Basically, it was worse than what I knew at the time. And it had caused like loads of my muscles in my torso to seize up.
Right.
A lot of them stayed that way for years and years because it never got addressed. And so this posture, I wasn't aware of my posture being like this, and no one ever mentioned it. So I don't think it was anything drastic. I think it was like a slight.
Yeah, I never noticed that you had any sort of weird posture.
Yeah, and even seeing like videos back and stuff, I never was like, oh, why am I standing? Kind of. So I think it was just tense thing. But I'm still working now on like getting my sternum to be in the right place because it's too depressed, and like there's a point on it that always feels really bruised because of the link to the back and things.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Once they'd sorted out your lymph nodes, did you find that you got ill after that, or did it just drain and it was fine?
No, weirdly, been feeling generally ill the whole time anyway, but no, there was no like big peak in kind of.
Yeah.
Luckily it didn't have a big nasty reaction when it all got.
And you're feeling much better now.
Yes.
Good.
Yeah, loads, yeah.
Good. And actually, for anyone listening, like when I had it, even though I didn't have all this going on, it still stayed around for like 3 months for me.
Mm-hmm.
It took me a long time to get my voice completely back, so it was real nasty.
Yeah.
It just shows how important it is to look after your voice, mm-hmm. and to follow your intuition with it as well, because I feel like you knew that it wasn't okay.
Yeah, and weirdly, yeah, when people were saying, oh, it's like overtired or overworked and things, and I was like, no, I know what that feels like. This is not that.
Do you have any advice for people who might think that they have something going on?
I would advise just going to see someone for the peace of mind, even though if you don't get support from something like Help Musicians and you're out of pocket for it, it's so, so worth it. Even if it's just that one session, you can get so many questions answered from it. Like, I feel like I left it so long before going to see somebody. But if you can see someone who can, like, stop you being so upset for all those months and months kind of thing, the sooner you can get some answers, the better.
Yeah, of course. And what about if you are in a job like you are? Like, you're in a really, really tricky situation.
Yeah, It's hard. You kind of second guess yourself as well, like, am I being a drama queen? Because like coming home from a ship is actually quite a big deal. You're like breaking your contract and all these, and they got to find someone to replace you, and you feel like you have to be really sure that you need to go home. And so I don't know, it's not a decision that I would take lightly, even, but you have to have your own health as your priority, like your vocal health. It's hard because you can't just be like any little like, oh no, I'm not feeling great, I'm not doing it, like,
because there is a reputation,
don't be a diva about it as well. Yeah, yeah,
as well. I like, singers do have that reputation of being like, but I do feel like people have that for a reason, and you can get a little bit sick if you were like working in an office. No, yeah. It wouldn't make
a difference.
You can
still do your job. Yeah.
But you can have the smallest illness as a singer, and it's going to really affect your voice. You're putting yourself out there in front of an audience every single night. And if you don't feel up to your best.
You mentioned intuition. Maybe kind of use your intuition to kind of gauge how serious it is. And if you're in a contract, like something like a ship, and you're a little bit ill, but you feel like you can get through it, and it's just like a short period of time type thing, then maybe give it a try. If it's a little bit longer, try and get people to cover you. But, you know, if it's just like a week or two, you can ask favours in from different cast members. But if it's something that's going on any longer than that, then, yeah, look after yourself.
For sure. And I think your health is important. And then also, you don't want to give yourself something much worse that could long-term put your career in jeopardy.
Yeah.
I also wanted to talk about wanting to change careers and when is that a good idea and when it's not. I knew it went through a phase of being like, nah.
Yeah, a few years ago I decided that I wanted to stop my singing. Like, I don't know, I can't even remember the exact motivation for it, but I know, like, when I was in school I was kind of being prepped to go into medicine. Obviously I'd chosen the singing path instead, and I just had kind of a year or two where I wondered if I'd made the right choice. And so I took all the exams and things for heading in the other direction. You knew me at the time as well, and I was quite like focused on that and quite sure that I should be going in that direction. It was good that I pursued it, but I've definitely come to realise that singing was the right choice. And maybe if that's all that came out of it was that I'm definitely sure that singing is the right choice, then it's kind of worth it. Yeah, definitely had a little blip.
Yeah, and I mean, it's easy to do that as a singer because it's not a stable career and it's often not what people expect from you.
Yeah, especially being away on the ship and things is anything but normal. So you can kind of come home and see what all your friends are up to and see people like settling down and things, and you think, oh my gosh, I'm so behind in this like life thing, and it can make you reassess things.
It's just such a different life than anyone else's type of life. Yeah. Like, I don't want to say normal because everyone has their own what's normal, but
yeah,
being on a ship, I don't feel like you can have the same things like relationships that you would have with friends, family, boyfriends, girlfriends, whatever. It's just not
that. Lucky, like these days is Skype and all that kind of stuff, but it's not the same. It's weird because when you're on the ship, it's kind of like being in Narnia or something, because you feel like a 6-month contract is a lifetime because so much happens. It's like so compact. And then you come home and you realise what 6 months actually is at home. It's like hardly any time at all, really. Like, the last 6 months have gone so fast for me being back in Wales. You come home and you feel like you've missed so much. And like, I've got a little nephew and I'm like, oh my gosh, I've missed like all these milestones and things. But actually, 6 months isn't as long as it seems when you're on board.
What is your favourite place that you've visited?
I think the Philippines. It's like paradise. It's like what I would imagine paradise to be. Not so much like the cities, kind of Manila and stuff, but when you stop at different islands, it's just amazing. I'm not even the biggest kind of beach and swimmer type person, but like the swimming there, it's just all stunning. Like, the water's warm and you can see through it all, and it just, I don't know, the scenery is amazing and the people are amazing too.
What are you up to now?
I actually am doing a semi-professional production of West Side Story locally.
Oh,
yeah,
cool.
Yeah. I'm playing Rosalia in it, tippy-toeing back into performing type of thing. So I get to sing America with Anita, but it's quite low pressure, more acty kind of thing. I'm just being as sensible as I can and just keeping up with all the exercises and things with the vocal rehab and just, yeah.
And you're like almost mended.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It won't be too long now.
Yeah, it's so true. It's just kind of like some days it's all good and then some days it's I forget that it's been all good and everything's doom and gloom because yeah. It's like a little hiccup, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. That's to be expected.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you. That's it.
Thank you. Doobity-doo, doobity-dweet-dow,
scoobity-dweet-wow, good job. Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.